Welcome to the first day of our mind gathering, our session. Collecting the mind, embracing and sustaining the mind, gathering the mind and heart in one point right here. I spoke a little of Sesshin last night, but I think maybe only two people were here in this group. This is a special Sesshin, Rohatsu Sesshin. Rohatsu meaning literally December 8th. It's our December 8th. Mind gathering retreat, celebrating Shakyamuni Buddha's great awakening. And celebrating it in the way that he did, by just sitting. This session was billed as a nuts and bolts teaching session, meaning a time to clarify the details of the practice itself. All the stories and teachings of the Buddhas and ancestors are surely about the practice, but this is a time particularly to really examine what is our Zazen practice moment to moment. And we have more periods of Zazen than ever to investigate this and develop it day after day. Last night I spoke of the four Bodhisattva vows, which is the context for Sesshin and the spirit of our practice, of Zazen practice, is the deep, far-reaching spirit of the Bodhisattva, vowing to cross over, save innumerable beings, vowing to cut through or end inexhaustible afflictions or delusions, vowing to enter boundless Dharma gates, both the teachings, the Dharma teachings of the Buddha, and every moment of our life as an entrance to truth, a Dharma gate. And realizing, becoming the unsurpassable Buddha way. If we keep these vows in mind, and you know, through these words or through the spirit of them, this will keep our intention strong. We need deep and vast and compassionate intention to sit through a week like this, or however long we're sitting, to sit through one period of Zazen. So at the beginning, today especially, really examining our intention and motivation for what we're doing here. one of the nuts and bolts sections of our Zen tradition of Dogen Zenji is his journal from when he was practicing in China with his teacher there. He was asking, as a young monk in his early 20s, lots of nuts and bolts questions to his teacher, Ru Jing. And they got recorded and later discovered after Dogen had passed on, buried in some trunk or something that they found of his. So he never published this during his life. It was maybe his own personal private notes, really. But they were later discovered and published. So one day his Dogen's teacher, Ru Jing, said, regarding this point about the bodhisattva vows as expressed through zazen, Ru Jing said, the zazen of the arhats and pratyeka buddhas is free from attachment, but it lacks all-embracing compassion. So the small vehicle zazen, the sitting meditation that's done outside the bodhisattva vehicle, is free from attachment, but it lacks all-embracing compassion. These two are closely connected. Freedom from self-attachment opens us to others and the suffering of others quite naturally, but maybe also possible to be practicing in a way that's directed towards freedom from attachment, but that's lacking all-embracing compassion. And Ru Jing says, this is very different from the zazen of the Buddhas and ancestors, where all-embracing compassion and the vow to awaken all living beings is the highest priority. I think as the session goes on, especially when we start to get tired and question how we got ourselves into this and how to find the energy to continue, even if it's about freeing ourselves, becoming free from attachment, that might not be enough energy to sustain us. If it's just about me and my freedom, but if we expand our motivation, expand our intention, and vow to sit in such a way to encompass the benefit of all beings, this can give us the energy to sit. This can nourish us. This can raise us up when we're tired or in pain, that we are sitting here for all beings. Which is a little bit intangible, maybe, but I think we have some sense of this. Even if it's inconceivable, we are part of the world. This Zendo is part of the world. We are sitting here with all beings, and we know that when we leave this room, we are immersed in the world of living beings, and how we meet them in every possible way, moment to moment, is deeply influenced by this zazen. Another way to say this spirit of compassion in zazen is open-heartedness. To sit not just collecting or gathering the mind in one-pointedness, but actually to gather the scattered heart, the confused heart, gather that together in a strong and open heart, open to all beings and their suffering. Just the spirit of openness. It's not about like trying to think of all the suffering in the world during Zazen. I don't think that's so helpful. But the open-heartedness, ready to meet whatever happens. And the way that we meet each other in Sesshin, the way we harmonize. One of the main things in a retreat like this, where we're not just sitting on our own, but in a group, in close quarters, and practicing together, all not just Zazen, but all these forms of practice, all these complicated, maybe sometimes annoying things that we do, like orioki, eating. I would say just really the main function of these forms, especially in a sesshin like this, is to practice together, to harmonize our actions together, more and more carefully attending to the others around us in this silent way. Very unusual. Deeply caring for each other in this way where we don't even make eye contact and we're silent, and yet that's what we're doing, I feel like. And that's how we're doing it. Part of how we're doing it is we're being very quiet and still and taking care of our own body and mind as a way to join this group more and more together till we feel and experience ourselves as one body, which I think often it does happen in sesshin. And so it's not about getting things right when we're learning orioki or something like that. It's not about trying to do it just perfectly, but it's about just having a sense of the larger group as we flow through these events. So particularly newer people who haven't done a lot of the forms, I would say don't worry so much about the details of exactly how you put out utensils and where the chant is in the book and these things. Just try to, as you're attending to the details of what you're doing, keep the larger view of the whole group in mind. And you're welcome to like look around, particularly during orioki, watch how people are doing things, and have a sense for, if you feel like you're falling behind, you can, and you can't quite, because you're trying to remember how to do something, just get ready for the next step. Like if the food's about to come and the utensils aren't quite ready, just don't worry about the details so much. Just get the bowl ready to be served for the next thing. Or if the water's going to come, just make sure that your utensils are out of the bowl and you're ready for the water. And then gradually we can learn more of the details. And in chanting, we can move forward and gather around the Buddha and as a close group, so we can encourage each other with our chanting. Ru Jing says, people outside the way in India also practice Zazen, but this Zazen still has these three problems of attachment, wrong views, and pride, and so it is utterly different from the Zazen of the Buddhas and ancestors. Shravakas, which is those working on being free from all attachment, but not with a bodhisattva vow of great compassion. Shravakas also practice zazen, but their compassion is limited. They do not penetrate the reality of all things with wisdom. Instead, they merely improve themselves and thus remove themselves from the creative seed of the Buddhas. So their zazen too is utterly different from that of the Buddhas and ancestors. The very essence of Buddhas and ancestors zazen is the vow to accumulate all Buddha qualities from the moment of arousing the aspiration for enlightenment into the endless future. All the Buddha qualities are mainly about this vast, compassionate, open-heartedness and the skillfulness to developing more and more skills to help others. Buddhas and ancestors never forget or abandon living beings, but have compassion for all creatures, even insects, and make a constant effort to rescue them all. And they turn over whatever merit is produced by all this to all living beings. Because of this vow, Buddhas and ancestors always practice zazen in the desire realm, in our everyday world of Jambudvipa. So this is Buddhist cosmology. Jambudvipa is one of the, in the cosmological system, maybe means India, but at the time that was just thought of as the world that we live in is Jambudvipa, and the ordinary world. And the desire realm, there's through meditation we can reach the form realm and formless realms, meaning like just experiencing pure contact of color and sound and so on. It's like the form realm, and the formless realm is when there's not even that. Formless meditations. But the Buddhas and ancestors practice zazen in the realm of desire, which is our ordinary human realm, which has great opportunities for influencing cause and effect. Buddhas and ancestors practice this way life after life, world after world, and attain great flexibility of mind and heart. So we're in our ordinary world where desires arise and cease, and we sit with the spirit of letting go and freedom for the benefit of all beings and an open heart to all beings. And that Buddhas and ancestors attain this flexibility of mind and heart. I, Dogen, bowed and said, "How do we attain this flexibility of mind and heart?" We might wonder the same thing. And my teacher, Ru Jing, said, "To actualize the Buddhas and ancestors dropping off body and mind is the essence of this flexibility. That is why dropping off body and mind is called the mind seal of the Buddhas and ancestors." I bowed. So not only is there a close connection between sitting upright and letting go of our current version of this body and mind and all our ideas about it, totally relaxing into the present, where body and mind drop off. Not only is there a close connection between that and this open-hearted compassion of the bodhisattvas, but actually they're not even different. Or dropping off body and mind is the way that we realize this flexibility of heart and mind, which is that the way to openly benefit all beings. So the spirit of compassion, foremost. Compassionate zazen. Open-hearted zazen. Compassion towards all beings, keeping it in our heart, the suffering of the world, and this includes ourself. Compassion for our own suffering, but not letting that turn into a narrow self-pity type of compassion. The more we find ourselves in discomfort, the more we can remember that the beings of this world right now who are in much greater discomfort than ourselves. And without falling into depression about that, let that lift up our practice, let that make our upright sitting even more upright and open. May we let go right now for everyone, however that might help. Again, I think we have an intuitive sense that this letting go, this dropping off, is the best thing we can do for all beings. And so to encourage both our together action, meaning like our practicing together, harmonizing together, supporting each other in this strange ship we have embarked on called Sesshin. I would like to try this practice at the end of Zazen, at the last period of Zazen in the evenings for those who are here. And I mentioned this last night. This is a practice that I learned at the monastery I practiced at in Japan. And it was very encouraging, I think, to me and the people there to arouse the bodhisattva heart of compassion and wholeheartedly express it together. And that is chanting these four bodhisattva vows in the most wholehearted way we can. And the last period of Zazen is a particularly nice time to do that because we're often the most tired at that point. Sometimes we have the most energy at that point, which is good because then our chanting can support everyone. But wherever our energy is, if we're counting the minutes till the end of Zazen and just waiting till we can go straight home and go to sleep, before we do that, to really wholeheartedly bring forth these vows of the Bodhisattva. So this is something new. It takes a certain critical mass of people that I feel like we haven't really had before, but I think we have enough now to do this, and gather our Bodhisattva hearts together in this chanting form. So tonight I'll just start it. I'd say 10 till 9. And just, this is chanting while we're just sitting facing the wall. And I'll chant the first half of the first verse of the first vow. And you can put your hands in gassho as soon as I start. And then, so I'll chant, beings are numberless. And then you can come in on, I vow to save them. And then from then on, we'll just all chant together three times the four vows. And then we can get up and do three vows and chant the refuges in Pali to finish. And the idea here is to take our body and our breath body and mind and heart body of Zazen and gather it all into the Bodhisattva's spirit of benefiting all beings and cutting through all our fixations and becoming Buddha, entering this moment's Dharma gate. So chanting from the deepest part of the belly, from the Tanden, the source of our energy. So I'll just demonstrate now a little bit, and why don't you just, you can join in on the I vow to save them part, just to see how it goes. So part of the thing about this is to chant in this way, very, very slow. Slow and full energy, full breath on each line. And, you know, it might feel like a quiet time of night to be, you know, settling everything down, but suggesting we belt it out to end the day. So, like, beings are numberless, I vow to save them. So, deep breath and slow, deep, and long. And it's an experiment. So we can see if this calls forth our Bodhisattva heart, and if it, maybe it will prevent us from being able to sleep. But that's maybe okay. And as we continue through the day to remember this spirit and to remember our intention and to clarify, as the guidelines said, were read this morning, Sesshin's a time to discover anew, clarify, and actualize our deepest intention, our deepest motivation. Discover anew might mean that we already know what our intention is, but freshly discover it anew. Or it might be that we've never really clarified it, or it might be that it's changed. But it's always new. Discover anew, clarify it, really what is most important in this life, and possibly even actualize it. And another little nuts and bolts piece about Zazen is the posture. So we take our seat and we arrange our legs in the most comfortable way. My feeling is that the lower half of the body is all about just finding a stable base and foundation to sit as immovably as possible without having to move. So I was tentatively even thinking maybe a good kind of guideline for yourself is, if it's okay to move, we try to sit without even moving at all, but if you have to move your legs during a period, it's okay. But say if you find yourself having to shift your leg posture more than maybe twice during a period, maybe once or twice, then I would propose shifting down, gearing down to the next, you know, more comfortable posture, which might mean it's kneeling or sitting in a chair or something like that. So, you know, this is a personal thing. That suggestion is just an offering. But I think there's great value in finding that, obviously, things are going to get uncomfortable in Sesshin. I think we all know it's going to get uncomfortable. But to find the most easeful, comfortable way that we can at least deeply settle into this body. Because I think the movement, there's an energetic flow thing, and everyone here has sat quite a bit of zazen, so we know this. But something develops when we sit very still over time, and it's somewhat disturbed by even small movements. So that's part of the surrender mind, the dropping off intention of Sesshin, is relaxing into the discomfort as much as possible, and letting go of the need to move. You know, obviously, if it's excruciating, compassionately we take care of this body. But it's a chance to really work with this issue of discomfort and this body that we seem to have been given in this life. To really, what does it mean to drop off this body, in the body, as the body, to drop off body and the mind that's wishing that the body would drop off on its own, or somehow that it would be easier, that this body would be easier to us, to our mind, to very gently, the spirit of great determination, great effort, great resolve, particularly Rohatsu Sesshin, Buddha's enlightenment Sesshin. This was the Buddha's inconceivable resolve to realize the way, sitting on his seat that last night. He sat down saying, "I will not move from this seat until I have fully realized and actualized the way." Such deep resolve, but very, very gently, with this mind of flexibility, the flexible heart that's very kind and gentle and relaxed. The strong resolve, but totally relaxed. What is that? Totally upright, really, especially this first day, really embodying the posture fully, the details of the zazen posture, the hand mudra over this tanden, this energy center, as a compassionate aid to help us sit upright and relax at the same time. Let our hand mudra encourage this upright relaxation. And the breath is a way to relax deeply, breathing, most relaxed breathing. If we feel that it's too hurried or tight, really notice the breath and let it settle very deeply. Taking those, when you're first sitting down, taking those first really deep breaths, three or so deep, really deep breaths, expel all the tension of body, breath, and mind, and deeply relax and really be present. And I want to talk more in these upcoming days about breath and the mind of zazen. So, especially if we're here for multiple days or through these days, even though the zazen of the Buddhas and ancestors doesn't fall into steps and stages, we can, as skillful means, play with developing the mind of Zazen over days. And so if your Zazen is generally counting or following the breath, let's continue. And maybe by the end I'll talk about some practices that actually let go of the breath. But if we're not used to following or counting the breath, let's, for this next day, again, a suggestion to deeply ground ourselves very directly in the present by using the breath to even count. If we're used to just following and counting seems really clunky, I think we can check it out. See if we can count in a way which is generally done 1 through 10 on the exhale. Deep, long, full exhale. Deep, long, 1. Just like, beings are numberless. 2. That full, without verbalizing it, that depth of the count up to 10. And again, just none of these things are fixed, but it's kind of nice, I think, to at the beginning here, to be a little strict with our concentration, our focus, our wandering mind. So I maybe say propose, this doesn't even seem like so much compared to what a lot of people might say, but let's say if we can count our breaths up to 10 for say three rounds, 30 breaths. It's not that many, but it's hard. Depending on how, you know, some people may be very focused, and that's normal. Some people may be like never get past 2. So then I think there's a great value in the anchor of these numbers, even more than just following without numbers. See if we can go 3 sets of 10 without missing a number, and if so, you can change that. You can make up your own, but I think I will practice this way until for the rest of today. Count breaths up till 10 and if we can count up to 10 3 times, then we could experiment with letting go of the numbers, still following the breath, but stop counting and see, you know, we can watch that transition. And if we're not counters or followers, if we're shikan taza diehards that don't want to do such mundane practices, counting or following the breath, I think there's a way to do such a breath practice in as shikan taza, as just wholeheartedly sitting, in the spirit of, we're not actually, it's not a narrow focus on like, there's like me and this narrow little relationship to the breath going on here. Again, this is all in the spirit of this vast bodhisattva heart, that all beings are included. As we breathe in, we could, you know, breathe in all beings, and on that one, we're you know, breathe out all beings. We include them all. I'm not saying to visualize such a thing, but that spirit, and obviously, counting like that isn't getting anywhere, and you know, it's just getting till 10 and then starting again. And I think things like this do set up that kind of danger, though, of, especially if we say, let's see if we can count 3 sets of 10 and then we can graduate to not counting numbers. That could be a dangerous proposition, because then we can get like, I can't come close to this. This is like, I am so unconcentrated. And then we start to feel self-judgment. So let this, if we do take up such a practice, let it be in the spirit of play. And just a way to check out where our mind is. That's one of the most wonderful things I find about counting practice, is it's a very clear feedback. It's like very clear information that I find personally, and I actually don't do this counting practice so much, to be honest, but that's why today, I want to like fully receive this internal feedback on my presence of mind. And sometimes it's very humbling. Wow, I really, and different times of the day may differ too. Sometimes we're sleepy and we can't get past one. And then to totally compassionately accept this and let that be what is. And then later maybe we could just go on and on with the breath. But it gives us feedback, and I think without doing this, it's very easy, especially just sitting with no particular object, it's very easy to fall into a kind of oblivion or a kind of semi-focused mind that kind of seems like we're just sitting, but actually we're not that present. Following breath, particularly counting the breath, gives very direct feedback, and this is just between you and yourself. You and your mind. This period is a 2 period. This whole period is just a 2 period. This period is like a 3 sets of 10 period. And not to get into judging those as better or worse, but just receiving the feedback of where we're at, and then deeply and flexibly accepting this is where I'm at, and resolving, you know, I think especially if we're very unconcentrated, without judgment, but to call forth stronger resolve to actually, can I get one more number in this set? I kind of feel like it's a little dangerous talking this way. We usually don't talk this way. Seeing if you can get to one more number, because we discourage gaining idea in our tradition. But that's, I think, part of the thing here, that we can, let's see how it goes, and we can talk about it tomorrow, and see if we can do this practice in a way that doesn't get into gaining idea, that's actually just resolving to and aspiring to be able to be more and more present in our experience as revealed by the breath count, but without getting into like some kind of game of I'm doing well or I'm not doing well. This may be challenging. So may it be fun, and if it starts to get into self-judgment realm, then if you can catch that, then just open the heart and relax and forget about it for a little while. What is strong resolve without gaining idea and self-judgment or other judgment. And that's why bringing up this bodhisattva vow as the overall theme, the overall encompassing container, the great embrace of the Buddha's compassion as the context for deep resolve to be truly present. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. Surpassable.